Never give beta bills to your parents. That's a long story, but just don't do it.
Hello, and welcome to React Native Radio, episode 3. Today, we're joined by AppHub co-founder Matthew Arbisfeld. And before we get going, I'm going to go ahead and introduce everyone that's going to be part of the show today. So today we are joined by Jed Watson.
Hey, everyone.
Peter Pykarchik.
Hey, everyone.
Kevin Old.
Hi.
And Lee Johnson.
How's it going?
And my name is Nader Dabit. So Matthew, before we get into AppHub, can you give us a little bit of background about yourself?
Sure. So I grew up around Boston in a place called Lexington, Massachusetts, and I went to school at MIT, studied computer science there, and one of the summers I worked at a place called Meteor. I'm sure a lot of JavaScript developers out there are familiar with Meteor, and when I was there, I worked on basically the mobile Meteor platform. So kind of that experience inspired me to work on AppHub and have dabbled in JavaScript for the past few years. So it's a really exciting time, I think, to be in the JavaScript community and working on these types of things. So yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as Meteor goes, does Meteor have a native like story or anything like that? I know they've done a lot of stuff with hybrid to my knowledge, but I'm not sure. I'm just out of curiosity, would like to know that.
Yeah. So right now their native story is basically a Cordova wrapper. So you can make a Meteor app and then they have the tooling to basically turn that into a Cordova native app. So, not quite the same as React Native, but I think I've also heard of people using Meteor with React Native. So sort of do the backend logic and data fetching with Meteor and then using React Native, to show the views. So there's a lot of interesting things you can do with Meteor still.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, there's some cool plugins out there for the Meteor backend or React Native. Getting the real-time updates and everything is really, really neat.
Yeah, exactly. Like the sort of the Meteor style maps really nicely into React. So they were, nowadays Meteor can work with React and can work with React Native because, they were really pushing this reactive style of programming even before React came out. So it's cool to see kind of a convergence of ideas about how to build front ends, being able to use different technologies with React Native.
Before Meteor supported React, were you able to bring it in yourself or were you kind of stuck with whatever Meteor came with?
It was possible. It definitely wasn't easy or as good as it is now. For a long time, there have been ways to use Meteor with Angular, Meteor with React, but I think now, Meteor used to have their own kind of front-end language called Blaze and they still support it, but they're now much more agnostic to the technology you use, and they are supporting, as an organization, like React, using React and using Angular, which is nice to see, letting developers kind of choose the open source tools of their choice. And I think it's made for a much nicer development experience.
Do you think that'll lead up to like a React Native roadmap for Meteor where you could just build React Native apps inside Meteor instead of Cordova?
I mean, I could definitely see, I think mobile is a big, Meteor cares a lot about mobile, and I think I could definitely see them supporting React Native with their tooling in the future. I think that they're probably still, waiting for it to mature and to a point where if they build something, they don't have to change it. Obviously things in React Native are moving so quickly, it's hard to keep up sometimes.
Yeah.
I definitely think it would be great to have a way to make a Meteor app that works with React Native that's supported by Meteor. And it's a very nice way to write your app.
Yeah. So how did the idea for AppHub come about?
Yeah, so it's funny we talked about Meteor for a little bit now because when I was at Meteor, one of the things I had got to build was a way to instantly update these Meteor apps that are running in production in the App Store. basically, for anyone who's not familiar, since we're writing apps in JavaScript and all the logic is powered by JavaScript, we're able to push new versions of JavaScript code to devices that are running. This lets us do great things because we don't have to go through Apple for every little change that we make. So at Meteor, I built the functionality that lets you push new JavaScript to devices that are running. And so when React Native came out, it was they made it very easy to do this by basically kind of containerizing the JavaScript so that it was seamless to push new JavaScript to a phone. So that's kind of, you know, where App Hub came to be. And, you know, my co-founder Ben and I have, I guess we've known each other since we were about 1 week old. So,
awesome.
first person, you know, we were really excited about React Native, started using it a lot in the early days. And I think one of the big advantages is being able to update apps in a much more seamless way. So that's, you know, it's an exciting project to be working on and help out the community with.
Absolutely. I mean, just the fact that you can update it and it renders native code instead of web code is a huge combo for React Native.
Yeah, it's great that I think it's actually one of the reasons that people are starting to use React Native is that there's much less friction when developing your app. And not only pushing code to production, but also if you're developing your app, beta testing, A/B testing, all of these things become much more straightforward if you're using JavaScript because it's an interpreted language and you don't have to worry about platform differences or compiling code for different platforms and pushing new binaries. So it's really made for like a much nicer development experience.
So you guys in the CI process, do you handle really the push update step, or do you do some scripting in there as well?
Yeah, so basically we're working on more kind of CI tooling, but right now, so if you create an app for the iOS App Store, you basically create this file called an IPA file, and this contains, you know, your binary, your JavaScript code, any images or other assets that you have. So you can push that to the App Store, and then that goes through the App Store and users can download it. And then with App Hub, you can basically give us new IPA files, and we will handle pushing new JavaScript to the phones, pushing new images to the phone. So we kind of handle the scripting of that and also the push to the phones. And then there are other issues with, you know, the big question is, what if you have different native code running? How do you make sure that the version is in sync? How do you update images? So kind of these are the questions that we're working on solving.
I think one of the most interesting things that you just mentioned is that, you know, it's not just the JavaScript code that you're updating, but also other things like image assets, which to me goes beyond like the simple use case. It's fairly easy to sort of have this thing where, you know, I could load my JavaScript from a server, I could cache that. That's pretty accessible. But you guys are going a lot deeper than that in terms of which parts of the app you can update. Maybe just for the benefit of everyone who hasn't sort of or isn't familiar with App Hub, you know, give us a quick overview of the stuff that you guys have got solved today and the problems that you're trying to address going forward.
Sure, yeah. So the way React Native is designed, it's at least for iOS, it's great. You can point, you know, say load JavaScript from this remote location and it will do that. You could even cache it. But obviously an app has more than just the JavaScript code. So one of the big hurdles that we overcame with App Hub was how do you update images and other assets that are running on a device, and how do you, you know, how do you keep these in sync with the version of the JavaScript that you're running? So that's one of the big, you know, big hurdles that we've already solved. And obviously there are a lot more things, you know, that we're working on, like optimizations. So, you know, if you make an update to your app, you don't want to have to download all the new images and all the new JavaScript that's with that update. So ideally you have a way of, you know, having some sort of diff between new versions of your app. There's questions about, you know, in the future, if you can split your app into different JavaScript bundles, how do you manage these effectively? If I change just one JavaScript bundle, ideally I can just push that and swap it into the code that's running. Another question is, how do you do like hot code loading? So if you're if Facebook makes an update to their Facebook app, you know, they don't force everyone to restart the app to get that update. They have ways of, you know, merging in new updates and making it a seamless experience. For people that have many concurrent users, you don't want to disrupt their experience using their apps. So how do you have intelligent ways of updating bundles? And then there's a whole set of questions as, you know, React Native matures. What if you don't have to ship all the JavaScript with your app? You know, you could just ship the first loading screen JavaScript and then potentially asynchronously load other parts of the app. And, you know, really getting more to a web-centric model of distributing apps where it's not this like 100 megabyte giant thing, but, you know, a really lightweight application. So I think that there's like a lot of exciting questions to solve here. And, you know, we've kind of just gotten out the something that works, and but there's a lot of ways we can really build on top of this and add more kind of more functionality.
And where are the barriers for you guys? Like, where do you think it won't be able to go? Obviously, building, you know, adding new libraries or native packages from NPM probably isn't something that there'll be a solution for because of the App Store guidelines, at least on iOS, that is.
Yeah, so definitely that is a limitation where if you're adding new native modules, those have to go through the App Store review process. Hopefully we reach a point where React Native is, the code that's distributed to React Native covers 95% of what you'd want to do with an app, where you very rarely have to update those native modules. And then, of course, there's still potential for updating native modules if you're doing things like internal distribution. If you're distributing, you know, to your beta testers, you could still update native code that's running in the app. So that's really the limitation is iOS App Store. You can't update native modules. And hopefully there's some way to work around that in the future, but it doesn't seem like Apple would really be down with you pushing, you know, arbitrary binary code to an app, but we'll see.
Still powerful though, if you have the 95%. I mean, that's huge. And you just, and the more dependency you put on your JavaScript code, the more you actually get to use for the Android iOS split anyway. So you're actually better off.
Yeah, exactly. You guys have made more React Native apps than I have, but it seems like most development is really done in the JavaScript code. And like you said, that lets you do interesting cross-platform things, you know, reuse code in the browser, even reuse code if you're running a Node server. So I think hopefully we move to this world where everything can be JavaScript, and rather than you write as little as you can with these, you know, iOS and Android specific APIs, and you're able to use the JavaScript. So, you know, if React Native gets popular enough, maybe all the APIs are provided via JavaScript that you need. So that's, you know, that's kind of the hope.
The fact that you guys take in the IPA is pretty surprising and sounds really, really cool. Can you go into more detail about that without giving away any secrets you guys actually have? But I know, because I know some of us probably do some real-time updating. I know we do, but it's only the bundle because that's easy. I can't imagine processing IPA and updating the images or anything else like that. So, I mean, how much detail, I guess, could you give?
There's no secrets here. I think, you know, we're in the process of open sourcing our libraries, and we basically want to make sure that they're, you know, up to par in terms of the APIs before we do that. So, you know, no secrets. But in short, the inside every IPA file is basically this compiled images file called a .car file. So when you upload your IPA to us, we process that car file and then use that to serve images. The nice thing, though, is basically Facebook has been working on a way to have images that work on both iOS and Android. So anyone who's done React Native development, you know, cross-platform, if you have an image that you want in your iOS app and an Android app, you basically have to do an individual process for each of those. But I think pretty soon, hopefully in the next month or so, Facebook will release this way to have a folder of your images, and that way you can reference them from iOS and Android, and you don't have to do specific processes for both. So I think that would be really nice to have also, and make it a lot easier to work with images in the future.
That would be pretty sweet. Like on on my team, the designers who are coming from web development have sort of found images to be one of the most like labor intensive aspects of setting up apps, like compared to just exporting stuff from Photoshop or Sketch and being able to use it immediately. Like the process you have to go through to actually get images into your app, and then, you know, it's a break in the live reload workflow and a whole lot of stuff. It's sort of a bit cumbersome, I think, compared to the rest of the developer experience. So yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, exactly.
It's coming.
Yeah. There's a lot of potential there, because if you're using something like Gulp to serve your app anyway, you can have Gulp manage all of the image resizing tasks and things like that. So you could have your designers just drop in any size file and do the automatic resizing. So I think it's going to be really powerful to have that be a thing.
Yeah. Do you see that build pipeline support going in the other direction as well? I mean, if you were to support like just pushing a new bundle or even pushing new source and doing the bundling on the server, sort of getting more towards a Heroku style deployment process where you could just, you know, Git push the latest version of your app the way you would on a server and have the updated assets pushed out. Is that something that like a direction you guys think you'll go in as well?
Yeah, that's really the ideal world is, you know, Git push to master and it goes to your beta testers, Git push to deployment, and, you know, we build your app, we manage the JavaScript and push that update immediately to production users. Really, we're waiting on that image thing that I mentioned on to be able to do this effectively. But once that's out, you know, I think it'll be really exciting to basically have a really seamless workflow where you can connect App Hub to your GitHub repo and automatically push updates and, you know, have automatic bundling and whatnot. And then, you know, past that, if you're, you know, that could be integrated with, you know, things like TestFlight or the App Store itself. So if you make a change to your native code, we could even push that change to the App Store and handle that process for you. So really providing like one place where you can do beta testing and A/B testing and instant deployments. And, you know, that is kind of the really React Native is the only place where you can kind of manage all of that workflow from one place. That will be exciting once we build out all those things.
So can you tell us a little bit about your company and how many people work there and where you guys are located and things like that, just out of curiosity?
Sure. So yeah, right now it's just my co-founder, Ben, and I, and there's definitely a lot to build. So we're located in Boston. Yeah, we started this about 6 months ago. We've been working, you know, basically nonstop trying to build out these features, but we're definitely kind of looking for more people to join us and help bring some of these things to life, because there is so much potential and there's so much movement in the React Native code base and whatnot that, you know, half of the time we spend is just keeping up with all the new developments. You know, we will start kind of looking to build out the team over the next few months. And I think there's like a lot of exciting potential for what you can do with React Native and just the platform in general.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that you guys have basically centered your entire company around the future of React Native speaks a lot to what you guys apparently think about the platform in general. But what is your opinion of React Native and the future of it coming from what you know and things like that?
I think there's great potential. And I think the fact that you've seen so much, like Cordova has been so popular over the past few years. And I would call Cordova a pretty big hack. But basically, React Native is taking all the advantages of Cordova, a single code base and JavaScript, which is a language, you know, all the web developers know, and bringing it into a place where really there's no limitations to the performance. Whether or not it's React Native that becomes popular, I definitely see JavaScript or some interpreted languages that's driving native components as being kind of the future of cross-platform development. The speed at which you can build cross-platform apps is incredible. So as long as there's, you know, iOS and Android and you have to build for both, I can't imagine another way of developing apps. Hopefully it's React Native is the way, but certainly I think there will be some way, some interpreted language that you write to drive native components. And it just seems like by far the most intuitive way to write apps to me.
Just out of curiosity, I know this is a React Native podcast, but have you looked at native scripts at all?
You know, not yet. I'm curious to hear more what you guys think about it. But does native script compile into native code, or is it an interpreted language?
Native script's actually, we haven't really talked about native script yet on the show. And I guess it's the other major platform that is like in any way similar to React Native, or at least the only other one that I know of. The way native script, it works, it's quite different. So it's JavaScript as well. It's running in your V8 or your WebKit engine. And the way they've sort of organized that is you've got all of these objects available which are wrapped native classes. So it doesn't have the abstraction layer that React Native has, where you've got a view and a view component and the text component and the other components that ship with it. But instead, you've actually got a JavaScript object that represents, you know, an NS string or, you know, any class. Like, I think they auto-generate sort of these JavaScript objects that expose all of the functionality, which is another interesting approach. Like, in some ways, it's a bit more powerful than React Native is because from the JavaScript perspective, it means that you don't have to have a bridge that you've implemented to use any of the native functionality. Like, everything that's in the platform is there out of the box. But I mean, for me, coming from the perspective of a React developer, you know, what it's missing is then the same thing that is missing from web development before you've got React, which is, well, you've got the React Native Flexbox implementation, but you've also just got the virtual DOM concept and the whole component lifecycle to use. So, I mean, I'm personally kind of hoping that those two concepts kind of converge down the track, where React Native might end up taking on, you know, exposing more of the underlying classes in the different platforms that it supports, so that you've got access to more power, but while retaining that really nice abstraction framework. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be sort of interesting if you guys look at it at some stage, you might find it's not too far away from React Native from a build and shipping perspective.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I guess there's, you know, like React Native has started at a higher level where it's, you know, building up these components, but I could imagine them, you know, providing a mechanism for, I could write almost a native module in JavaScript. You know, I feel like there, a lot of platforms have tried this, and I don't know if they're always successful. I think React Native has kind of chosen a level of abstraction that's shared between platforms, you know, at the text view level or the image level. But when you start getting a little deeper, you may start to lose kind of the cross-platform abstractions. So I wonder if you kind of go with the native script approach, whether you start writing more platform-dependent code. And I don't know if that's necessarily the best thing in the long term.
I think they've got answers for that, but it's probably a topic for another conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it's an interesting platform anyway.
Yeah, so I wanted to jump in with a question related to your frequently asked questions and, you know, kind of where all of this hinges upon Apple permitting the ability to just push JavaScript or image assets, sounds, et cetera, as it says. What happens when Apple restricts that? Obviously, the answer would be that would be a bad thing, but I'm wondering if you guys know a little bit more about this clause and can talk a little bit more about this section. Has it existed for a number of years? Is it pretty solid to base something off? I'm just interested in your kind of business intelligence as far as building a business based off of this.
Yeah. So we've talked to Apple Legal pretty, you know, we launched on Hacker News and the following day we had a nice 3-hour conversation with Apple Legal. And basically the gist of it is for many years, you've been able to put web views in your apps and have dynamic content loaded. You know, any kind of JavaScript interpreted code update, they're okay with. That being said, developers shouldn't, you know, change their Dora the Explorer app into a zombie apocalypse app. So kind of, you know, respecting the core functionality of your app and not changing that through an update is important. But, you know, I think most of the App Store review process, this is just coming from me, but I think the idea behind the App Store review process is, number one, make sure that the content is good and the idea of the app, you know, follows what Apple's looking for. And number two, making sure you're not using kind of C calls that could be harmful to the phone. So I think updating JavaScript doesn't, as long as you're not fundamentally changing your app, I think Apple will always be okay with those sorts of changes.
Awesome. That's good to hear. Another question unrelated to that, and it's on your pricing page. You guys mentioned daily active users as part of the packages, and I'm just wondering how you guys accomplish that. Do you bundle something with the app that goes out through an AppHub app, or is there another way? Or are you just simply tracking downloads? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So basically how you use AppHub is you include an SDK in your app and you link it to an AppHub, to the AppHub dashboard. So every time the app starts, it basically pings our server and asks, is there a new update available for this app? So sort of that registers as a new device. The nice thing about this is in the future, you could add some metadata about every device. So say I sign in to my phone into your app, and you know I'm Matthew Arbisfeld, I have this email. In the future, I could push a specific update to just me if I wanted to. So one of the nice things that we're excited to work on is basically being able to do beta tests with production apps. So we've all kind of gone through the process of trying to get a beta build to like my mom. You know, it's impossible to walk her through like test flight and, there's like five different apps you have to download just to get test flight running on your phone. One thing I'm really excited for is just seeing my mom pop up on AppHub and saying, okay, let her have this new beta build of my app and, be able to do testing that way.
Never give beta builds to your parents. That's a long story, but just don't do it. No, I'm just kidding. So could you mention a little bit about the versioning? I know you guys have the versioning and the beta and all that. So how do you handle, like, if you were to push up an IPA and you want this to be a beta version or this to be a production version 1.2, like, how do you guys handle that today?
Yeah, so when you push an app to the App Store, it has a native version associated with it. So say version 1.1. So then if I make, JavaScript changes that are compatible with version 1.1, I can tell AppHub, okay, this change is compatible 1.1, now push it to my users. But, the moment I break that compatibility and I make a change that won't work, if I write JavaScript to work with only a specific native version, then I tell AppHub, okay, this new build should only work with version 1.2. And that will prevent people running version 1.1 from downloading that update. So that means if you change native code that won't work in a backwards compatible way, you basically just have to make sure that you bump up your version number and you don't deploy to the old users. There's also other ways to solve this. So I've seen basically people, if you add a piece of native functionality, so say you add a way to vibrate the phone when you get a message, in your JavaScript, you can basically check for the existence of that native module. So that way you can update JavaScript and have it work on older versions as long as you're making sure that you're basically checking for new features in your JavaScript code and making sure that they're not fundamental to the changes in your app.
Cool. So you had mentioned something about the daily users and the SDK check-in, but what counts a user as daily? Like, how does that count work? Because your pricing is based on the number of daily active users.
Yeah, so basically every phone kind of has this individual identifier associated with it on a per app level. So every time a phone connects, it sends the AppHub server this identifier. And then we keep track of the unique identifiers over the course of 24 hours. Kind of the nice thing we can do here is display, how many users have each version of your app, how many users have downloaded your app in total, how many users are upgrading now to the newest version. Kind of that's why we use this unique identifier to do this. Like I said, in the future, we can kind of do more intelligent knowledge about each device. So, you could even imagine sending the location of every phone and then saying, pushing a build to only your North American users or push a build to 30, 40% of your users as like a stage rollout. So these are kind of the things we're working on now on building out.
Seems like a great opportunity to do app analytics as well.
Yes, definitely. I think app analytics and also error reporting is another thing that a lot of people have asked us for. So I'm not sure if you guys have seen this, but Sentry is basically this error reporting service. You know, that it's all open source, but they have a hosted solution also. One of the things we're looking into doing is basically, if you have Sentry in your React Native app, basically having errors reported on a per version of your App Hub app. So that way you can say, okay, your App Hub version 3 had this error. And I think there's like a lot of potential there for that and doing analytics, things like A/B testing. So if I push a new version of my app, seeing how many users download it, seeing what the onboarding conversion funnel, things like that.
It sounds like you guys are, I mean, you've probably looked at Ionic, right?
Yeah. So Ionic, yeah.
Yeah, the whole platform. It sounds like you're basically providing a lot of the same kind of solutions that they've got around Cordova apps, but for React Native.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think the biggest pain point for developing apps right now is updating the apps in production. But there's so many different things you can do when you're when you have JavaScript code, things like beta testing, A/B testing, staged rollouts, you know, instant deployments. It's all possible if you're using JavaScript. Ionic has definitely done a great job of it with their Ionic deploy, and you have things like PhoneGap, Adobe Hydrate, things like that that have, you know, solved similar problems in Cordova. So I definitely think, you know, we're trying to kind of provide the platform to make it really easy to iterate on your React Native apps. You know, in the future, we could potentially support Cordova, but I think, you know, React Native has just seen so much momentum, and it's such a nice developer experience. There's so much potential here.
Well, and tools like yours, I think, help people go from that, oh, this is a great idea, to, well, this is viable for a production application, right? Because you have to answer those questions that you guys are answering. You have to answer the question of, how am I going to push updates? How am I going to keep up with version? How am I going to keep all of that straight? And React Native is so new that people are trying to figure it out on their own. So you guys are kind of ahead of the curve, I think, in giving people that option.
Yeah, I think, you know, the great thing is a lot of React Native developers are coming from a web background where, you know, you're used to pushing to Heroku and its updates, and you can have a staging Heroku server and your production Heroku server. And it's definitely a step backwards when you go into the mobile world and you now have Play Store and the App Store and Test Flight and Hockey App and who knows what. And, you know, kind of providing a similar ease of development experience is definitely like a thing we're excited to work on. And I think that the React Native Playground guys, I have to put in a plug for them, have also done a great job of basically, you don't even need, you know, Xcode and all these tooling running on your computer. You can just get started in the browser. So I think things like that are really going to make mobile development much more accessible to the whole world.
It's great that you just mentioned React Native Playground. I've sort of been in the back of my mind to ask, like, where do you see App Hub fitting in the greater React Native community, or the greater React community? Like, you know, which services have you thought about? Sort of, if you look at React Native as a puzzle, right, and you're one of the pieces or a couple of the pieces, you know, what's your view on that whole ecosystem?
Yeah, so I mean, Ben and I are good friends with the React Native Playground guys, and I think really where we see ourselves fitting into the, you know, you have an app, you've done maybe a little bit of local testing and you've put on some of your friends' phones, but now you want to go deploy to beta users and start the process of deploying your app. So I see us kind of taking it on from, you know, your app's in a beta stage. How do you then get that all the way from beta to testing to beta users to production? And I think the React Native Playground guys are really making it as easy as possible, kind of in the experimental phase where you have an idea and you want to start playing around with it and sharing some prototypes with friends. So I think there's a really nice kind of interplay there. And one thing we've talked about is basically, you know, one of the great things about React Native Playground is, you know, you can share apps so quickly with people by just sending them a link, and they download the React Native Playground app and it's good to go. So I think it'd be cool to have a similar process for App Hub, where if you have a beta build, rather than making them download your specific build, maybe it's available in React Native Playground as well. So, you know, I think there's a lot of potential for, you know, making the integration of these services more seamless. And another thing would be like, I think there will come a point where it's no longer React Native. It's actually React with some a native iOS component, native Android component, and a web component. So then how do you have true cross-platform development where one code base that works in iOS and Android and web and even desktop, and basically supporting that cross-platform development by maybe hosting, you know, your web component of the app and providing a desktop shell for your app. So those are some of the things we're also looking into. So basically taking your production app and making it available to as many people as possible and providing instant updates.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think with things like Electron around and then, you know, the distribution model of the App Store for Mac app developers and same thing with the Windows Store, it's sort of back into the same paradigm where if I want to get my app distributed through the central store, then I've got to learn all these new processes. And yeah, if there's a way to ship React apps for desktop in Electron, and it's all kind of tied into this system where you can also ship native apps to iOS and Google Play stores. So that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's really cool. And one of the, I don't know if you guys have checked out, I think it's called N1 or N2. It's basically, there's a company called Nihilist, and they make an email API, and they just recently came out with this app, an email client app that's built in React. And one of the things they provide is a way to write plugins that are in React. And so you can download kind of these add-ons to your email client. So I think, you know, I feel like more and more apps can provide kind of a way to write plugins to provide functionality and have, you could write a plugin that works not only in your web app and your desktop app, but also in a React Native environment. So I think there's like a lot of potential for having more modular apps that use React and JavaScript to let developers add functionality to apps, which is really exciting to me.
Plugin support for mobile apps, I think you just blew my mind.
Yeah. Cross-platform plugins.
That's support. An amazing idea. I mean, it sounds like it would get crazy in the real world, but it's an amazing idea.
Right. Yeah, so then you get into questions, how far would Apple, you know, what is considered changing the app? But, you know, I think it would be cool if, you know, I have my Gmail app, I want to add an extra button, I can just write some code and push it to my Gmail app. It'd be pretty crazy.
Well, I was about to type a little note in here saying we're going to wrap it up in just a moment. But yeah, so we are going to wrap it up shortly. Is there anything else that anyone wants to mention or ask? Or Matthew, do you have anything that we haven't really discussed that you think might be important for us to talk about?
No, I think we basically went over everything. But yeah, if anyone is interested in trying out App Hub, you know, shoot me a mail, matt@apphub.io. And, you know, also if you're interested in, you know, helping out with our open source efforts, you also shoot me an email and we can give you kind of beta access to the open source components. And then you can play around with those and start trying to host your own server. You know, we're starting to look more into providing that sort of functionality.
So, you know, just out of curiosity, who's using your app? Are there any big players or interesting projects you want to tell us about?
Yeah, sure. So I can mention the ones on our homepage, and we're really excited. MBC is one of our big users, and they're pushing out an app pretty soon called Incredible. And then, you know, I think there are a few other early React Native apps that are starting to use App Hub. So I'm not sure if you guys have seen on the showcase, but Spiro for Cancer is one that we're excited to support. And yeah, a few other apps out there also. I think a lot of people are still kind of getting started with React Native and are in the development stages. But yeah, a lot of exciting things in the pipeline.
Cool. I know we're definitely looking at it here at School Status, and I've spoken to a few people that are also kind of looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're actually we're expecting to push our first app out integrating App Hub this week. So we're pretty excited to get it running in production and get away from, we have this huge app that's currently going out via an MDM server, which is not as bad as the App Store review process, but it introduces a whole lot of other nightmare overheads. Basically, we've got 1,000 installs on an MDM server, and updates are actually really hard. Like, they take, you know, the guy who's in charge of that about a day to actually do, just because MDMs are, it's not solid technology. So he is so excited about us actually rolling this app out with App Hub integrated into it. It's like, please, please, please let me never stay up all night making sure that everyone is running the latest version of this app ever again.
Yeah, that's great to hear. A funny story, one of our users is making an app for cosmetic. Basically, they're putting in kiosks in different department stores around the world. And before App Hub, they had to call the IT department every single store and walk them through this updating process for how to update the app. So, you know, hopefully App Hub provides a slightly better experience there for them.
Well, we've got like 1,000 retail locations that, and it's growing quickly, that are running this app that we wrote. And basically, they're all in single app mode. And what you need to do with the MDM is unlock them from single app mode, remove the app, reinstall the app, put them all in single app mode, and hope that nothing went wrong. And invariably, like maybe 20% of them, something's gone wrong. And then you're putting in all these devices in different groups. And it's just like, it's so hard. So I think even though you'd think that an enterprise app distribution where you don't have to go through the app store, it sounds great until you try and do it in the real world. And then you hit all these issues where devices are offline, or, you know, the network access is dodgy and it receives a it's all kind of facilitated through the push notification system. So it's just not reliable. You guys are going to be a huge improvement to that workflow.
Yeah, well, happy to help out there.
Thank you.
Okay, very cool. Well, I think we're going to go ahead and get to the picks. Kevin, would you like to go first?
Yeah, absolutely. So my React Native related pick is a blog post that was put out last week called Deep Diving React Native Debugging. And man, what an amazing post that, honestly, I feel like I could hand this post to any developer and they can kind of get the gist of how the React Native workflow goes. So it's got screenshots and it breaks it down step by step of what's really happening when you're interacting with React Native. So I think it's a great resource for any web developer or iOS dev to come up to speed. And then my next and final pick is kind of is unrelated to React Native, but I'm a huge fan of Twitter. And the pick is not Twitter. The pick is a book called Hatching Twitter. I'm sorry. It came out a couple of years ago, and I started reading it a few months ago. I've still got a few hours to listen to it to finish it up. But I just it's my pick because in the last week, Jack Dorsey has been named CEO again. And word is, you know, some of the latest headlines are that there are massive layoffs. And I just find the Twitter ecosystem very interesting because it's something we all, it seems like, rely on. But there's all these layers that, you know, profitability and all the drama that goes around it that just kind of makes it pretty interesting. So Hatching Twitter and the related, you know, read that and then catch up on the latest news. So that's it.
Cool. Jed?
Yeah, this isn't really picked, but I just wanted to give props this week to the React team for the React.14 release. They've managed to solve, I think, every single one of the pain points that I had in React, whether it's like having all the add-ons ripped out into their own NPM packages is a huge improvement for supporting open source React components. You know, even context has been fixed and finally documented. Still don't use it, but it's documented now. And like all the warnings around the update, the decisions around React DOM, they've just been on fire lately. So thanks for doing that, guys. It's fantastic to use.
I will second Facebook open source in general. The last couple of weeks, they've put out a lot of stuff, everything from GraphQL and the tooling around that. And, you know, all the stuff with the updates to React. So absolutely. Lee?
Yeah, I'm actually going to change mine because Kevin sparked something for me when he started talking about Twitter. I just got back from the AWS conference and saw a demo for Twitter Digits, which is a way, it's like an OAuth authentication for your users using their phone number. It's two-factor, they put in their phone number, and it basically authenticates them through their Twitter account pretty seamlessly. And with AWS, you can use that with Cognito and Lambda and other things like that. So saw a cool demo of this using all those toolings in like 10 minutes. So for your single sign-on or easy entry for a user, is pretty cool option. That's a new thing by Twitter called Digits.
Cool. We'll definitely link to that. Matthew?
Yeah, I'll echo React 0.14 and all the work Facebook does to make kind of the upgrade experience really seamless is nice. And then completely unrelated, my friend introduced me to this new snack. It's called Moon Cheese, like the moon and then cheese. And it's like basically like cheese puffs, but like 10 times more delicious. So I'm addicted to them. They come in three flavors, cheddar, Gouda, pepper jack. So I highly recommend trying them out. Really delicious snack.
You want to ship some to Sydney for me?
Yeah, let me know your address. Be on the way.
While we're giving props to Facebook Open Source, actually, I think also congratulations to both them and to Dan Abramov for that announcement. The fact that Dan's been doing amazing work in the community, not just with his projects like Redux, but also, you know, he's always on Twitter supporting people and helping people and writing these great guides. So, he's just started or about to start, I think, working with Facebook on React Native, which is just incredibly exciting.
I did see that. That is exciting.
Yeah, and I'm really intrigued because he's going to be working with the tooling specifically. So I'm very hopeful that we'll get a lot of really cool things a la Redux and Redux DevTools.
Well, I'm going to pick it's kind of an online book written by Christian Alfani. It's actually kind of a cookbook. It's called the React Webpack Cookbook. So if you ever need to implement something into your Webpack config file and it has to do with React, you can basically find all of that broken up into simple to read and simple to understand modules. And it's really awesome. So I'll definitely link to that so anyone that wants to have that as a reference can take a look at it. Okay, well, we're going to go ahead and wrap up episode 3 of React Native Radio. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see everyone next week.